This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, you're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Tree Lin. Malaysia remains one of about 30 UN member states which have yet to ratify the 1987 UN Convention Against Torture. A few civil society organizations recently got together to launch a campaign to pressure the Malaysian government to ratify this treaty. Shamini Darshni of Amnesty International Malaysia and James Nyagam of the Human Rights Commission of Malaysia are in the studio to explain why it's important that Malaysia becomes a signatory to this convention. Let's start with that then. Why is it important?
Hi Lynn, thanks so much for having us. It's important for the government to ratify the UN Convention to demonstrate the seriousness of preventing torture in the first place. There have been reported incidences of torture that has been captured by both reports by Suhakam and human rights organization Suaram. That torture does happen, specifically in police custody is the area that we're looking at. And so by signing the Convention Against Torture, it demonstrates a commitment to eradicate torture.
Well, looking at history and so on, and it's all the more that Malaysia should sign because we are already bound by international laws and treaties, namely the human rights and the United Nations human rights convention, and also the ASEAN Declaration on Human Rights as well. And Malaysia has also signed the Convention on Rights of Children, on Disabilities as well, and the Convention CEDAW as well. So we are a progressive nation, and it is only right that we keep up to the times and be able to be recognized as nations who are against torture.
How does this year's Stop Torture campaign differ from previous years?
Okay, the Stop Torture campaign is actually an amnesty campaign. What we're here to talk about is also about the Act for Cat campaign. So Act for Cat is a joint initiative by Amnesty International Malaysia, by Suhakam, Suaram, Lawyers for Liberty, as well as the Bar Council. And we got together and we started talking about how torture is prevalent in Malaysian society. And it's something we describe as state-sanctioned torture, which means it happens with the knowledge of the state. And so when we decided that we needed to band together and make a stronger call in Malaysia for our government to ratify the Convention Against Torture. So Amnesty, and if I can talk about Amnesty's work in this area for a bit, the Stop Torture campaign, the Amnesty Stop Torture campaign was launched 2 years ago. We are continuing the Stop Torture campaign in Malaysia under the Act for Cat banner. So that is continuing. But the aim is the same. It's basically calling on the Malaysian government not just to ratify the Convention Against Torture, but also the first optional protocol to the convention.
Could you both give us examples of, you know, what you mean when you say that torture is prevalent in Malaysian society? I mean, you mentioned police custody earlier, but what are other instances of it?
Well, one must take note that it's not only places of detention. Any place where human beings are kept, it can be a home for children, it can be a home for the aged, and so on. All of that would amount to places of where people can be subject to some form of torture. Now, therefore, groups who probably would be included are the aged, the disabled, the lesbian, gays, transsexuals, women, children. So these are the categories of persons. And one of the things that the ingredients perhaps of torture is pain, either physically or mentally inflicted upon persons, length of periods of detention, conditions of detention and imposed on persons who may not have the liberty of movement and freedom.
There's also the Geneva Conventions as well as the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, which forbid torture. Why does this focus solely on the UN Convention Against Torture?
The UN Convention Against Torture really talks about the key safeguards that you have to, that a government needs to introduce in places of detention. It talks about international standards of these safeguards. It talks about prevention. It gives you a key factor of the UN CAT is that once a government signs on to it, it's basically allowing for a special committee on the prevention of torture to evaluate the detention conditions in the country. So that is what we need to see here. So that's why the specific target of UN Convention Against Torture for ratification.
Which is, we're already in practice, even before signing it. For instance, human rights institutions are required to monitor places of detention, visit, on-site visits, and so on, which we're already practicing for many, many years now. So all the more we should sign it.
This year's theme is Never Alone, Never Forgotten. What's the story behind it?
Never Alone, Never Forgotten is the Amnesty focus on a couple of the cases that we are working on. Through the Stop Torture campaign, we are actually focusing on two cases. One is a case of Yesenia, who is a Mexican woman who was detained. She was Yesenia was detained in 2012 in July, and she was tortured for 15 hours by the Mexican police. The other case that we are focusing on is the Philippines case, Dave and Enriquez, who was also detained for theft. So in these two cases, these are very Amnesty cases under the Stop Torture campaign. Not Alone, Never Forgotten. But what we are trying to showcase through this through these cases is that torture happens everywhere. Amnesty did a study in a couple of years ago, which polled, it's called 30 Years of Broken Promises. It basically looks at torture around the world. It looked at torture in 21 countries, looking at and polled 21,000 people. So what that study found, the most startling fact, was that half of the people polled in that study were asked this question: if you were detained by the authorities in your country, do you think you'd be safe from torture? 44% said they wouldn't feel safe. A lot of people, through that study, it also showed that a lot of people, about 80% over, wanted safeguards to be introduced. So using that study is another reason why we need to echo that same call in Malaysia for proper safeguards.
Well, also, you must be mindful when discussing persons who may be tortured, are persons in death penalty, awaiting execution. The waiting itself, it can take about 20 years. That itself is torture.
Because we are, of course, also discussing mental torture as opposed to just physical.
Yes.
Malaysia, as mentioned, is one of only about 30 UN member countries who has not signed the treaty. Why do you think this hasn't happened yet?
Well, the reasons that we have received is that we are not ready yet, because we're not practicing some of the requirements of the convention. And therefore, until we are ready, and then perhaps we will sign the convention. But that's an open-ended answer. You don't know when. So most countries around the ASEAN region have signed it and then are working towards it, a progressive realization.
Yeah.
And it is only right that we likewise sign it first. And then however long it takes. In fact, some of the countries have signed it. In fact, compared to them, Malaysia is doing much better. And all the more Malaysia should sign it.
And that's also a good point, because once you ratify the UN Convention Against Torture, UNCAT itself gives you 3 years to prepare yourself to be evaluated by the international mechanisms. And if I can just, Lynn, correct myself from what I said earlier about the 30 years of broken promises. I mentioned 44%, and that 44% felt that only 44% of people felt that they would be safe. Yeah, which means over 60%, about 60% felt that they wouldn't be safe if they were detained.
Which is obviously a very problematic
yes.
number.
Yes.
I'm speaking today with Shamini Dashni, Executive Director at Amnesty International Malaysia, and James Nayagam, Commissioner over at the Human Rights Commission of Malaysia. And we are discussing why Malaysia should sign the UN Convention Against Torture, why we should ratify that. Up next, we find out whether we have clear laws against torture in Malaysia, as well as if the ends ever do justify the means. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me today, Shamini Dashni, Executive Director of Amnesty International Malaysia, and James Nayagam, Commissioner at the Human Rights Commission of Malaysia. We are discussing the UN Convention Against Torture. So we've established Malaysia hasn't yet signed this treaty because, you know, quote unquote, we're not ready. Shamini, you mentioned something interesting earlier that I just wanted to pick up on. What are the international evaluation mechanisms that would go into place after we've signed this?
One of the things is the Special Committee on the Prevention of Torture. This is provided for within the UN Convention Against Torture, and it basically allows for on-the-spot detentions, unannounced, on-the-spot visits to places of detention, which I understand is something Suhakam also does. Maybe, James, you can elaborate on Suhakam's work on that.
Well, we do on-site visits to prisons, lockups, immigration detention centers, places of detention. It's can either be when we receive a complaint or on our own initiative to investigate. And we are able to do on-site visits, especially to the immigration detention centers as well. The reason when we do our visits, we inspect the buildings, we inspect conditions of detention, be able to meet the inmates, talk to them, and in privacy as well. So all that we take into account, we have a checklist as well.
How often do you receive complaints about places of detention and who from?
We receive complaints mainly from the prisoners or the inmates of any detention center. It may come through a group or through their family members, or during our visits, they have requested that they meet us, and the authorities have been kind enough to allow them to meet us. It is that time where we begin to receive complaints, concerns about concerning their stay in some of these places.
So there are actually avenues for people who are detained at some of these centres to voice their concerns?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Do we have clear laws against torture here in Malaysia?
I'm afraid, it's a rather grey area, personally speaking. When you mention the word torture, obviously everyone is against it. But then there are what may seem permissible areas questionable where practice of torture is visible. For instance, caning, corporal punishment, lengths of detention, and so on.
Are any of our laws incompatible with obligations under this treaty? The ones that you just mentioned, would we not be able to practice and apply them anymore?
One of the examples could be POTA, the Prevention of Terrorism Act. It allows for detention without trial, which is a form of mental torture, and it also it's not POTA also is not tight enough to say that you can't how you extract information. It's not tight enough to say what is permissible in terms of how you extract information from somebody in detention. So that part of the Prevention of Terrorism Act is also something to be worried about.
This is a question that I tend to ask whenever we have people in to talk about conventions and things of that nature.
Okay.
How binding are conventions? You know, if we signed it, if we ratified it, I understand that it's certainly a very strong statement of intent, but what would it really mean in terms of the people whom we would be doing this for? You know, people who are in centres, people who may be detained under POTA.
It is not just for people who are detained under these laws, But it's also, when you ratify a convention and you make that declaration internationally that you are observing the articles of this convention, the onus is also upon a government to change domestic laws in order to comply with those international requirements. So that's the first thing. And we, unfortunately, have laws that do not comply with international standards of human rights. POTA is one of them. The Sedition Act is another. So this is something that a government would have to do. And it's to protect not just people in places of detention, but to protect everyone.
What would you say to the argument that the ends justify the means when national security is involved? Because I think this is something that's used in many countries, certainly, and in many different situations.
Well, persons may be detained for questioning, but then there must be safeguards. There must be judicial overview. There must be access to legal aid and to the lawyers. There must be certain guidelines guiding persons so that a individual or a group of persons don't misuse what is provided. So when we did our roundtable discussions, I think we have about nearly 7 recommendations for us to be considered to all the more to sign the convention.
That report that Amnesty cited earlier, which said that less than half of 21,000 individuals polled in 21 countries said that they would feel safe from torture. However, when the question was phrased differently, it seems a lot of people think a certain degree of torture for suspected terrorists are acceptable, mm-hmm. Which is not unlike public opinion on the death penalty, for that matter. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts?
Yes, you're right. The way the question was posed did say that. I think it was about 30 over percent to that answer, to that question. I don't believe the ends justify the means at all when it comes to... We've seen, whether in case of death penalty or torture, we've seen too many times how our court systems or the justice system is abused in order to justify, most often than not, a political reason. But speaking of just to elaborate on what James said earlier, the U.S. a couple of weeks ago released a report, and it was revealed a report attributing the CIA, Central Intelligence Agency, on torture practices. And what happened subsequently was that the U.S. actually amended its National Defense Authorization Act, NDAA. Basically, it's banning U.S. officials from using torture techniques. And, we've seen it on the news, we've seen it in TV programs, mock executions, sexual humiliation, waterboarding. These are all, unfortunately, real. And even the U.S., who is a signatory to the Convention Against Torture, is amending local laws in order to meet those international obligations. And that's a great step forward. So that's what we want to see here as well.
When we talk about safeguards, mm-hmm. Acts of torture take place behind closed doors by and large. So what would those safeguards entail? How do you put mechanisms in place to ensure accountability is being met?
Well, for instance, there must be CCTV cameras. There must be records documented.
Of interviews.
Yeah. Of interviews. Register to record down what time and what time persons were interviewed or spoken to. Records. You see, I must tell you this. We are not only talking about persons who are detained, but it also extends to family members, children, and methods that are used to obtain information by threats and so on and so forth, and how much even family members are affected by that. Also, whether they've had the opportunity to meet family members, for the lawyers, visits, and so on. So these are some of the safeguards, that we have. And at the time when we require, they must produce these things, not to rely solely on one investigator or a panel of persons who are not selected on an open basis.
And to add to that, it's safeguards look at the entire process upon the time of detention, when somebody is arrested, when somebody is within a police lockup or in the detention center, to even after they are released. It encompasses the entire process.
Without these sorts of mechanisms, without, for example, CCTV footage, without records and things of that nature, how do we know how much torture is actually happening in Malaysia?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
To which we have no answer.
To which we have an idea. The deaths in police custody, Swaram released their figures a couple of weeks ago, and it showed that there's been 250 deaths in police custody in the last 15 years. That's incredulous. It shouldn't be happening. And of those 250 deaths, only three have seen the inside of a courtroom, which means most of these families do not have answers to why their loved one died. And that is something that we need to put a stop to, hence this campaign.
Why do you both think torture continues to endure? I mean, with most of society being broadly, I think, against the practice of torture, surely policemen and the government are not immune to public opinion, you know, with people saying, well, this has to stop.
Well, it depends how one, it's actually persons who make known why reasons for torture to exist. And perhaps the later one is now prevention of terrorism. And when discussion on prevention of terrorism is considered, then the reasons why, your safety and therefore we need to detain these persons and so on and so forth is put forth to justify detention, process of detention, the use of obtaining various methods of obtaining information and so on. So when a man on the street listens to these things, will respond in a way and will probably agree to that kind of thought. But when then you consider the test, whether these things are right, as you said, whether the means justifies the end, is a question that we need to consider.
Who in the government would be responsible for making the ratification happen? I mean, if the public wants to pressure their elected official, who should they call? Who should they write to? Where do they go?
That's interesting, because Ministry of Home Affairs, I mean, the persons who probably would be authorities would be probably parliamentarians, judges, prosecutors, lawyers, national human rights institutions, civil society groups, medical personnel, and so on. These are persons. And Ministry of Foreign Affairs as well, especially the Attorney General's Chambers.
Yes.
So these are all the different avenues to which, somebody listening who wants to direct their energies to, these are the people they should be writing to.
As part of the campaign, AI Malaysia has also launched a specific petition asking people to support this call to ask the Malaysian government to ratify UN Convention Against Torture. And the petition is on amnesty.my. If people feel strongly that we should tell our government to prevent torture of any individual in custody or in detention, sign the petition, make this voice stronger, and let's make our stand known.
How many signatures are you hoping to garner for this petition?
As many as we can get. I wouldn't put a figure on it.
And it's, how long has it been up?
A couple of weeks, 2 weeks maybe, but okay. It will run until December.
And have you found the response to be healthy?
Not yet. So we are hoping, we're going to push out this petition over the next couple of weeks to get as many people to sign on to it as we can.
And finally, what message would you both like to leave us with on the subject of why Malaysia should ratify the UN Convention, Against Torture?
Because it's right and just to do so, to show our commitment in safeguarding human rights, values and practices. It is only right that we respect a person's freedom and to be able to be committed enough to protect as well. You see, the act of protection comes from the state. The state has duty to protect persons, not abuse it.
Mm.
So therefore, that is a message that we need to get across.
People also, from my side, I think people need to understand what torture really is. We had a Tools of Torture exhibition that we make as part of our awareness raising activity. And it's basically stuff that from various reports that you can get online. Torture, like a simple hammer, can be turned into a life-threatening weapon in detention. Even a cigarette, you know. So I will not go into details, but these are harrowing, harrowing experiences that people have had to live through. And that's what we're saying is wrong. So people need to understand that torture by no means is an answer to justice. So we need to put a stop to it.
And again, that online petition, you know, where can people go in order to access that?
You can go to amnesty.my to sign that petition.
All right. Thank you both very much for joining me today.
Thank you, Lynn.
I've been speaking with Shamini Darshini, Executive Director of Amnesty International Malaysia, and James Nayagam, Commissioner at the Human Rights Commission of Malaysia. We've been discussing why Malaysia should ratify the UN Convention Against Torture on Live and Learn. You've been listening to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.